All right off the top of your head, your favorite DC crisis, go.
Favorite crisis? Well, for sentimental reasons, I really liked Infinite Crisis.
Infinite Crisis?
Well, it was right when I was starting to read comics and getting into women. You got to admit, like, the lead-in to that was great. Super organic, the way that they like, let it grow over the years and the miniseries as it started it.
That's a hell of a lead-in.
Yeah.
How about this lead-in? Do you like that?
Yes.
Did that work out?
Yes.
Oh, man.
What's your favorite crisis?
Final.
More than Infinite Earths?
No, Infinite Earths is good. I love it. It's very dense. It's not easy reading.
Oh, no, not at all.
But if I want to read something that's absolutely gonzo, Final Crisis is it for me.
Okay.
Well, hello, everyone. You're listening to Casual Wednesdays with Doom Rocket. I'm your host, Jared Jones. And across the table from me, as always, is the Kyle Rayner to my Guy Gardner, MJ Kramer.
Why am I not the Guy Gardner?
Because, well, Guy Gardner's a putz, and I'm clearly the putz of this equation.
But I have the red hair, and you have the dark hair.
Yeah, but Batman's not looking to slug you.
Boy. But you have some Kyle-ish tendencies, too. You're an artist.
No, I'm not. I'm not an artist.
You dabble. You dabble.
Don't say I dabble. There's no
dabbling.
Yes,
you do. I've seen you. Nah, I've seen you drawn over there at your desk.
That's top secret. Well, it's our 50th episode.
Hooray!
Hey, did we actually become a weekly podcast to expedite this and get it over with finally?
We're doing like Marvel and DC did when they just said, hey, we'll just have stuff be twice monthly or three times a month to get closer to those landmark numbers. I feel like it was more obvious that they did that, like, was it like 6 years ago when they started having like four different writers rotating on Amazing Spider-Man. It really seemed like they were just like churning to try to get to, was it 600 at that point? 700?
So. Brand new day.
Yeah, it was either 600 or 700.
So I guess this week we're going to kick our feet back and relax a little bit. We earned it, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been half-assed in the last couple episodes.
It's like, if we've got 50 episodes, that's like almost 50 hours of recorded material.
I don't want to tell you how many hours it actually is with the editing. Hours and of the editing, graphics,
yeah.
But we've made it. We're going to sit back and chat about our experiences with the podcast for a couple of minutes, and then we're going to get into some news, talk about some comics. What do you say? You want to talk about some comics and stuff?
Yeah, I guess.
Well, how's the podcast been for you for 50 episodes?
It's been fun.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You enjoying it?
Yeah, I like it more now that we do it in the morning.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is weird because if you know me in real life, I don't know, you might know this already, I'm not much of a morning person.
No, you are not.
And it's very difficult to get up this early in the morning.
Yes, it is.
But I think it's still worth it because I feel like just like the vibe between us is good when it's this early, just waking up and full of caffeine.
I like the fact that we shifted to morning as well. It makes it feel more immediate. It's new comic book day.
Yeah.
We've had an opportunity to read some of the comics the night before.
Yeah, energy is good.
Feels good.
And because we read the comics the night before, we have time to kind of ruminate on them and get a little bit more, bouncing around in our brains about it.
Opportunity to change our top five if needs be.
Yes. It's nice to be able to like read all of those books possibly before we get to talk about them.
I think the weird thing is that people actually admit to listening to us. That's the weird bit.
It's always really exciting when people just like people that I don't expect to listen to our podcast will just be like, "Yeah, I'm listening to your podcast," and I get really excited because I'd always just assume we're making this and just throwing it out in the ether. I'm never going to assume anybody listens to us, and so when I hear that somebody does, it's just really exciting surprise.
I'm always like, really? I'm sorry.
Nuh-uh.
But that's just me being humble.
Nuh-uh. You're proud of our podcast.
I'm very
proud.
In fact, I think I might get some stickers made with our Casual Wednesdays logo.
That would be really cool.
If you guys would like a Casual Wednesdays sticker, just say so on social media or whatever.
When we get them.
When we get them. I should have did it for C2E2. I don't ever think of these things ahead of time. Anyway, it'll happen. So yeah, 50 episodes. Congratulations, darling.
Congratulations to you. Oh, you're the one that put so much work into this.
You're the one that does it. So now let's talk about some news. We got some news items come up. Cherry picked throughout the internet. A couple of things that caught our eye. I wanted to get one thing out of the way.
Yeah.
If we can shift gears to a more somber note, I wanted to talk about Bill Messner-Lobes for a minute, if we may.
Of course.
I believe that Fox 2 Detroit did a piece on him about how he is currently displaced in terms of his living situation. And there's been a very nice response from comic talent on social media. A lot of people have been directing people towards a GoFundMe that is actually supporting Bill and his wife at the moment. Bill Messner-Lobes, of course, is a legendary comic book artist, has been out of work for quite some time. He was awarded the Bill Finger Award at last year's San Diego Comic-Con, where mm-hmm. I got to meet him at the CBLDF booth. Right now, the GoFundMe for the Severe Weather Network. And you can contribute to this charity that does support Bill and his wife at www.gofundme.com/severe-weather-network. Head over there. Give what you can. We love you, Bill. Hope for the best.
But I didn't realize that he co-created the Max.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew that he had worked on Wonder Woman because he was credited at the end of the movie as one of the special creator, you know, special thanks at the end.
That should be worth like $50,000 right there.
You'd think so. You'd or think. Something. Or at least, you know, to continue to hire him.
Mm-hmm.
But the comics industry definitely has a thing with the hot new thing whereupon they kind of ignore creators of yore.
Guys.
I feel like something like Bill Messner-Lobes, who is willing to work and wants to work, it's like, isn't there something you can throw at him? You know, this is a legendary dude.
Yeah, there is an audience embedded for this. There's an audience for his work. I mean, I would buy that book.
Well, anyway, we're wishing you the best, Mr. Messner-Lobes. And Mrs.
Moving on to the next little piece of information. Dark Horse warns readers that there will be nudity in Frank Miller's Xerxes. Also, water is wet.
That's really weird.
Isn't that odd that they would actually make a point to say, hey guys, by the way, there's going to be some dong and possibly...
Speaking of Mr. Miller, I don't know if we talked about it last week with the fact that he's doing a young adult book.
Yeah.
Starring Carrie Kelly for DC.
Illustrated by Ben Caldwell, though.
Which is great.
Yeah.
That I'm super into. I will look at anything Ben Caldwell draws ever. But I just, you know, I see young adult... You know, aimed at the younger set. I don't think Mr. Frank Miller. I was just like wondering how many hookers with a heart of gold is gonna be in this book.
Oh goodness.
No, I will definitely read it. It's Ben Caldwell. I will look at it. I can always if it's something that I hate the writing on, I can always pretend like it's written in Portuguese or something.
Oh no.
Well, I do that with a couple books that come out now.
Hey, do you think like he'll curse in this? I mean, it's young adult, teenager's curse. I mean, that'll be his reckoning.
If they do, they'll probably like jumble it out where they put in like the hashtags and the ampersands.
Hey, if I wrote a YA, they would curse left and right because kids curse.
Oh yeah, they do. I don't think you curse like a sailor.
Do I curse enough for a Frank Miller comic?
No, nowhere near. No. And you don't talk as enough like an old timey private eye. So I feel like the narration is going to be like for this like assumedly like 14-ish year old girl.
Carrie Kelly, she's like. The city's screaming for me.
Yeah.
It's an open mood. I'm late for class. That would be cool. Another item from Dark Horse. We got a new Black Hammer book.
Yes.
Not just the return sequel arc of Black Hammer. We also have The Quantum Age by Jeff Lemire and Wilfredo Torres.
Yeah, super exciting.
That's going to be awesome.
Really been getting great artists for all of the random little spin-offs that they've been doing. I think that they realize what a awesome thing they have in this series.
Yeah.
And they're just trying to milk it as much as they can. And it doesn't feel as...
Milked?
Like, yeah. It doesn't feel as obnoxious as it often does when Marvel does this sort of thing. Because the world that Lemire and Ormston created here feels like it has the depth and the breadth to actually be able to support all these books.
Absolutely.
It's not just like... one character, one team. Like, there's a whole world in there that they can expound upon. And I think it's really great that they're able to do that.
I'm into it. I'll read a little piece from the official press release, if I may. Quote, in the world of the Eisner Award-winning Black Hammer series, but 1,000 years in the future, which I like, a collection of superheroes inspired by the legendary heroes of Black Hammer Farm must band together to save the planet from an authoritarian regime. End quote. Now, that implies a couple of things. One, they get off the farm. Two, that they... their daring do is legendary, so the story we're getting in the second Black Hammer arc is probably going to be a real doozy. I've been dying to read more of the actual main story of Black Hammer since it ended. I've been enjoying Sherlock Frankenstein.
I just love that the Dr. Star book is very obviously a riff on Starman. Yeah. And his name is James Robinson.
Yeah.
And he's obviously drawn to look like James Robinson. It is real cute.
There's nothing subtle about any of Black Hammer. Like, all its influences are worn on its sleeve. You can spot.
But which is wonderful. Like, and it's done with such love.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a good series.
It's such a good book.
And over on the Marvel side of things, there's, you know, this Infinity Countdown miniseries.
But what's it countdowning to?
Well, apparently, it is actually counted down to something. I've actually had a customer ask me, it's like, so is this a countdown to them? And I was like, well, they haven't announced anything, but I would guess maybe,
yeah.
Since there's a movie coming out with the word Infinity in it.
Now, when DC did the countdown, it was countdown to Final Crisis. We knew what was coming at the end of the countdown.
And then also Grant Morrison was like, oh, this has nothing to do with my miniseries.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was pretty funny.
He's a fibber.
But also that series was really bad. That was a bad one.
What, Countdown?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, Countdown was not good.
Yeah, don't contradict my Final Crisis endorsement at the beginning of the episode.
I agree with the choice of that. I can see where you're coming from with it, being the Grant Morrison stan that you are.
Yeah, leave me alone.
I'm not saying that as a bad
thing. That's a good thing.
So there's going to be an Infinity Wars series, and there's going to be an Infinity Wars Prime one-shot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why Marvel always has to do these Prime one-shots. Like, there has to be this additional
extra $5 they can make 100,000 times
six,
over?
Sometimes yeah. Six. That has, like, you know, multiple creators pitching in on it. And it always, like, seems superfluous. But then if you start the series without reading it, you feel like you're missing something.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of, the worst.
I don't know. The whole structure for their events is really flawed. DC's is, too. DC isn't perfect in this regard. We talked about this in an old episode. Marvel chasing after its film arm, like chasing after studios, just to make sure that there's...
I think they want to keep that synergy going.
Yeah, but is it effective?
I don't know.
Infinity Wars, obviously, is tying into the big film that's coming out in 3 weeks.
It sounds like it. All of the, like, the whole cast of characters that they're listing here, Adam Warlock, Doctor Strange, Gamora, Captain Marvel, Star-Lord, Thanos, Loki, all of them except Captain Marvel and Adam Warlock have been introduced, look to be playing large roles in the movie coming out. So, I mean, they are definitely trying to keep it
tied,
close-ish.
But as a retailer, do you see people actually coming in straight from the theater going, oh my God, give me more of these comics?
Well, I think I've mentioned before that doesn't happen very much.
Mm-hmm.
The only times that it has happened that I've noticed really is for Wonder Woman and Black Panther.
Yeah.
And I think that's because people who aren't used to seeing themselves portrayed on screen as a superhuman.
As positively as those were.
Yeah, got to see that and were like, oh my God, I didn't know I could read this. Give me more of this. and while Wonder Woman sales have gone back down to more normal levels, Black Panther sales are still larger than they had been before the movie, which makes me real happy.
As far as G-Mart Comics is concerned.
Yeah, yeah. My little store.
Shifting gears, let's talk about a couple of the comics that came out this week. No spoilers. We don't want to spoil it. It is New Comic Book Day. Give people the chance to read their books. But let's talk about the big event. Not only did we turn 50... Saga turned 50.
It did.
Now, this is full disclosure. Are you fully caught up on Saga?
I fully caught up last night.
Good for you.
Because I wanted to be able to possibly talk about it. It's funny how Saga, as a series, doesn't really seem to care that it's at issue 50. Like,
yeah.
It's story arcs, you know, continue as they have always continued.
Yeah.
Which is a wonderful thing about Saga. They are superbly scheduled. And it's just, you know, 6-issue arcs, and that's how it goes. And this happens to be the second issue of an arc, and it's a good arc and a good issue in that arc, but it's not like some kind of, like,
big blowout
50th
anniversary
extravaganza with, like, you know, random 3-page stories by, you know, star-studded cast, right?
Yeah.
Or, like, Rob Liefeld.
Right. I like the little Valentine BKV gave Fiona Staples on the back of the cover.
Image has been doing all month these special
We Believe
Virgin covers.
Yeah, that's right.
Which are really pretty. Sometimes they're different art than the normal cover, and sometimes they're the same art, just with no logo and all that stuff. It's really nice for them to spotlight their artists, because the artists at Image are arguably the best in the industry.
It's also nice for, you know, a blogger like me to have assets that don't have, you know, trade dressing all over it, as Image Comics always does.
And oh my God. Insane. Jared hates it. Jared hates it. How the logos are always all over the book. Hey, like, there are
tell
never...
tell your pals over at Wiktiv that it's like, it's one thing to get all the greatest artists in the world to do covers for your book. It's quite another to put your damn logo all over it.
Well, a lot of the times, the various artists will post their versions of the art without the logo on it. You just have to search back through their Twitter feeds to find it.
So yeah, Saga 50. I'm not caught up. I have no idea what's going on.
It's really good. It's really good.
Oh, I presume.
Yeah. But once again, it's only two issues into a story arc. They don't have any special fireworks going on just because it's, well, sort of in the first couple pages,
easy,
but I'm not gonna give anything away. It's pretty funny and great.
Let's give
in
it a Saga's score.
Normal way.
Yeah, let's give it a score. Where would you give Saga number 50?
I don't know. Like it's hard to grade a single issue of Saga because they're meant to be parts of a full story arc.
But for the sake of the segment,
I don't know. Eight.
Eight.
Eight. It was a really good. It was a good issue.
Good.
It's really great that the kids are starting to get older and just being able to have really poignant moments with them as young kiddos.
Moving on, we got Metal, number 6, the grand finale. Actually had the ship pretty consistently, I suppose.
Ish. That one, the last couple were late.
Yeah.
I think this was supposed to end back in like February.
When they were launching the beginning of the New Age of Heroes, which they had to push back.
They pushed those back like crazy, yeah.
Yeah. So Metal's finally here. Was it worth all the Sturm und Drang? I read the whole damn thing, and I gotta say, it's loud. It's supposed to be loud. It's Metal, you know, devil horns and all that. I don't know what the hell I'm supposed to be reading a lot of the time. I've never read a book that had more exposition in it, and I still have no clue what the hell's going on or what people are doing. When I look at panels, I don't know who's doing what. Greg Capullo is a magnificent artist, but there's just a lot going on here. There's a lot of plates spinning, but I don't feel that Metal affected DC in the way that it should have for me to actually feel like there were stakes attached to this one big event. All these other things are spilling out of Metal now that it's come to an end. Like
some that already began.
Without spoiling anything, it sets up...
There's a good-sized epilogue in there.
Primarily, it sets up the big Justice League thing that Snyder's going to be doing, mm-hmm. because of course it does.
And it gives a lot of other little teasers.
A lot of teasers of things to come.
The same way a lot of other various DC crossovers have done. But I feel like Johns just does that a little bit better. There'll be like a page or two at the end of like big one-panel previews of things.
Mm-hmm.
Do enough to really get your blood going, but not enough to like really give a ton away.
Right.
So I don't know. Maybe I'm just like waxing nostalgic about the good old days.
Maybe. I was thinking about this actually this morning. I was going through the Metal hashtag on Twitter, and I was like, reading like people's actual reactions. There's a huge audience for this that are really stoked about this event.
Oh, yeah.
It makes money.
I see them at my work, and I have to kind of like downplay how I really don't love the series. Cause like, if you tell people that, they're like, what?
See,
how do you not like this series?
Is it a generational thing? Is it?
I don't think so.
Cause
some of them are as old as me.
I love huge events. Final Crisis is bananas. Metal is purposefully bananas. Like, the one thing you keep reading about in all its, like, press materials or interviews with the creators, it's like, this is the most insane thing DC's ever let us do. And it's like, yep, mm-hmm, sure is. But do I feel anything? And the answer is absolutely no.
It feels very calculated.
Yeah, it's a calculated insanity.
Which, of course, it's gonna be. It has to be with all of the editing going on. But
of course, it
shouldn't necessarily read that way if you want it to be like this batshit crazy thing.
Yeah, it's
devil horns.
Like executive management. That's what it does. It's like,
I can't, as a retailer, I can't complain. It sold all the way through. They didn't overdo it on the tie-ins or, you know, tie-in miniseries. No. As far as like comparing to Marvel, they did not overdo those tie-ins.
Well,
and the tie-ins sold great.
Nice. So what would you give Metal number 6 since you read it? Out of 10.
Just that, I don't know, like a 6. There was a panel in that epilogue that is, and this is not spoilers, it just shows Superman standing next to Batman, standing next to Wonder Woman. And the height difference, I was tweeting about this last night.
Yes, this one's Batman the tallest.
No, they had Superman being the tallest, but like the height difference between all of them, it was like an equal height difference. It looked to be like 3 to 4 inches each, and that is not the height difference. Wonder Woman should not be that short looking.
Oh, goodness.
I was so mad. I was tweeting about this, and then a couple people like tweeted like, well, you know, their canon heights are like Superman 6'3", Batman 6'2", Wonder Woman 6 foot straight. And it didn't look like that. And she's wearing an outfit where you'd think she's probably wearing heels, even though you don't see it. She would not be that short.
When you wear heels, you're taller than me.
And there's a good height difference. There's like, what, 4 inches height difference between us? Six? Yeah, no. Oh, I was so mad.
But you can't damn an entire book based on one panel.
True. But I've been seeing that more lately. Like, if I was an editorial at DC, I'd be like, no, you draw Wonder Woman taller.
Matter stands.
Taller.
Give me a score.
I don't know. Six.
I give it a 5.5.
I guess six for its ambition.
Its ambition's the 5.
Yeah?
Like that, I meet you halfway on ambition. Insofar as execution.
So it doesn't feel like it has the depth that a crossover written by Morrison or Johns has.
Right.
It just feels like it has the breadth.
Certainly.
It feels like it's like sort of like it's reverential and referential to Snyder's other work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, enough to a good amount of Morrison's work, but it doesn't really go much further than that, which is kind of a bummer.
I'm trying to remember why Daniel was in this thing. Like, I'm really, really struggling to understand. I think he opened a portal for Batman to go to the... I don't know. But it happened, and they made a big damn thing about it.
And there was Baby Darkseid, remember?
And what happened with Baby Darkseid?
I don't even know. He's been showing up in Wonder Woman, and he's, like, older again after they went through this thing, so...
I don't get it. I don't get it. Anyway, we could do a metal episode, I guess, one day. Retrospective. No? Okay.
This is enough talking about it. It doesn't need any more attention from us.
All right. Well, we got time to talk about one more book that came out this week. It's probably going to be Doomsday Clock.
Well, we could do that or Jessica Jones. It's the last Jessica Jones issue.
All right, let's talk about Jessica Jones then.
We'll talk about it really quick. It was really good. It was kind of like a little standalone. Or I could just talk about it in my top five because it's in my top five.
All right, fine. Fair enough. So real quick, you read Doomsday Clock number 4?
Yes.
I read it too. Best issue yet?
Yes. Definitely.
I would say I still don't understand why it exists, but it had a story, a beginning, a middle, and an end.
It actually delves into the new Rorschach. Yeah. Really gives some like
interesting twist
and some needed development. Like this is like once again like old school Johns. He's really getting into the meat of the character.
Yeah, he did it.
This is the first issue that it hasn't felt like, oh, okay, they're just riffing on Watchmen shit. They're actually getting into the material, doing something new with it.
Well. The things that I liked about the issue was when they were building beyond Watchmen itself, which is still heresy as far as I'm concerned. But they were doing a really good job of like, but then what? After the ending of Watchmen, which I think the answers to that are surprising. They're employed towards the characters very, very well, particularly Rorschach, but particularly Adrian Veidt. I wasn't counting on it. Without spoiling a damn thing, like that little wrinkle in the story, I was like, interesting. How Rorschach and Veidt got together is a really interesting part of the story.
But also Byron, the Mothman. He was so well written.
Steals
in this issue.
The entire show. And there's supplementary material in the back of the issue that's just going to rip your heart in shreds. The only parts where it didn't work for me is when they were alluding to the DC universe.
Yeah, that's what kind of made me get all squeaky too. It's like, ugh, no.
Like, not this. Like, let's do this, not this. Yeah, they're just going to do this anyway.
But those references were small, inobtrusive-ish.
Until the, no spoils.
Yeah.
All right, so Doomsday Clock number 4, what would you give it?
7. 7, yeah.
I would give it a, 7 with caveats.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. You want to do the top 5?
Yes.
All
right, let's do that now.
All right, Midgie, what do you got for me this week?
Well, I guess I'll just start with a book we already talked about, which is Saga Numero 50.
Mm-hmm.
This series is a landmark for Image. It's one of the best possible gateway comics for anyone at all.
Absolutely.
Like anybody you want to feel like, hey, you might want to read a comic, read this one, see what you think. I had a customer that I overheard a couple days ago saying, yeah, I read some of Saga, but I really don't like the drawing.
What?
And I really wanted to say like, oh, you don't like the drawing of multiple Eisner winner Fiona Staples? Like, like 9?
Doesn't know.
I think she's won 9 Eisners.
Trust me, if that's coming out of that kid's mouth, I guarantee he doesn't know what an Eisner is. Don't worry about him.
But Saga is wonderful. It is. This is two issues into what will be volume 9.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Saga 50. It's great.
Great.
Great. What's your first one for the week, Jones?
I'm going to get a debut out of the way. It's one that I've been looking forward to. Mother Panic, Gotham AD, number 1.
I almost put this on mine, but then I saw you had it.
Latest installment from the DC's Young Animal Troop.
I think that they've been doing a good job of giving a reason for relaunching the books.
Absolutely.
Like just twisting the premise a little bit.
Yeah, or moving it forward. Mm-hmm. And yeah, exactly. Pulling the rug out from under you, which I like. It's unexpected. You can't do shit like this with other characters in the DCU, but with creative characters like Young Animal, absolutely you can. Jody Hauser's back. We've got art by Ibrahim Mustafa.
His art is super good.
Wholly complimentary to the Tommy Lee Edwards art from the first part of the original Mother Panic series. Yeah. He's the co-creator.
Yes.
Then we got colors by Jordan Boyd and Marisa Louise, and letters by John Workman. John Workman, I think, works best in this book just because of the noir aspects of it. Really, really do enjoy the entire concept of Mother Panic. I like that it moves into the future. I haven't read it yet, but this old man Joker thing is kind of...
Yeah, I only flipped through it as well, but I am really excited with Ibrahim Mustafa being on that book.
Yeah.
It looks really pretty.
So yeah, Mother Panic, Gotham AD, number 1, my first pick this week. MJ, what's next for you?
Well, my next one, I'm going to hop back over to DC. So the series Mystic You is one that I was pleasantly surprised by how much I like it. It's like sort of a limited... premiere series?
Yeah, it's in a prestige format, which I think is weird.
Yeah, I think they might have done that to keep the price down, because I think it's 48 pages, maybe. It's definitely, like, larger than normal.
And it's the kiddies.
It is and it isn't. Like, it's young adult-ish, but it's also, like, you know, for everybody. But it's, like, sort of like a Harry Potter in the DCU, but they're not kids. They're, like, college age. But lots of different magical characters. It mostly centers on Zatanna, but because it's oversized, it's like it's shorter issue-wise, so this is the third issue, so this is the last one of this storyline.
Yeah.
It looks like they're probably going to continue on making more, maybe, hopefully.
Series?
No, probably more little mini-series, because I think these will collect very well into trades.
Absolutely. Because you heard that Tynion is going to be doing Justice League Dark.
Yes.
Coming up.
This still feels like it's possibly out of continuity.
Okay.
Or very, very vaguely in continuity.
I read the first issue. I feel that's the case.
Yeah, it's just so cute. It's just a great angle to take on these characters. And I love the slightly young adult drama aspect to it. It's super cute. But this is the third issue, sort of the end of the story arc, like I said. Art is by Mike Norton and Jordi Belair. I love it a lot.
Norton's a good artist.
Yeah.
Belair's in magnificent colors.
Yeah, they do a super good job of just getting all these kids down really well. And it's written by Alisa Quitney, who has done some various Vertigo work. It is super fun. Pick up the other two issues if you can. Mystic You, number 3.
Very cool.
What's your next one?
For me, it is another finale. It is Kid Lobotomy, number 6. Black Crown has a whole book in the can now. It's official. Congratulations, Black Crown, you did it. And what an auspicious debut. Kid Lobotomy was their mission statement, and they followed through with aplomb. It has an absolutely gorgeous cover by Nick Robles, who will be illustrating the Euthanaut series written by Teenie Howard, coming out later this year, I think in October. But Kid Lobotomy number 6, written by Peter Milligan, art by Tess Fowler, colored by Lee Loughridge, flats by Dee Kniff, who's been doing flats also for Punk's Not Dead, and doing a magnificent job
at
that. Yeah,
Dee kind of works with doing flats with Matt Wilson a lot, too.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
Great.
Hardworking guy. And, of course, letters by Aditya Bidikar. I have said so much about this book on this podcast. It pains me a little bit to realize that this may be the last time I talk about it on this podcast. So suffice it to say, if you haven't read anything from Black Crown, let Kid Lobotomy be your gateway drug, and then follow it quickly with Punk's Not Dead and Assassinistas, and watch out for what's coming next, because this is an imprint you guys need to be reading. Kid Lobotomy number 6 is my second pick this week. MJ, what's next for you?
I'm going to go back to one that we already discussed a little bit.
That's fine.
Doomsday Clock number 4.
It is in your picks.
Yes. Okay. It's I haven't been super bowled over by the other issues, but this issue, like we talked about, I was really pleasantly impressed with.
Mm-hmm.
As much as always, the problematic nature of its creators not being super into its making.
Or actively against it.
Yeah.
And the DC creative officer, chief creative officer, co-opting an Alan Moore affect.
Yeah, that bugs me about it and makes me unable to love it wholeheartedly.
Mm, same.
Ever.
It's the best work Gary Frank's ever done.
I don't know.
As dense as it is, and him being able to maintain that level of quality, because towards the end of his like Action Comics run, it started to get a little spotty.
I still like his Superman stuff.
Well, towards the end of his Action Comics, he was drawing Superman as Chris Reeve back in those days, but towards the end of the run, he made him look like a beaver.
Whatever. Shut up.
I'm just saying.
I still liked it. Shut up. But I have it on my list because I'm really excited about this issue. I hope it goes more in this direction for the rest of the series.
I'm not counting on it.
I'm hoping. And being a little less attached to its source material.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't know if that's how you'd refer to it. And I like it's veering away from the DCU in this one a little bit more than it was. And I don't think that's going to happen for very long.
I would say source material, definitely, because this reads like corporate mandated fan fiction, which is fine.
But
all of this is, that's what all comics are, all superhero comics.
But I think it still reads better in that way than, say, Metal Number 6 did.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
But it's going for a very different thing. But that's just my opinion. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Doomsday Clock number 4. It was enjoyable. I think I see what you have there for your next one.
Oh, I do. I accidentally bent the corner there. I'm sorry. It was an accident. It fell out of my hand.
That is no longer near mint, Jared.
I was avoiding a cat. So anyway, my next pick is Shadow Man, number 1 from Valiant. Written by Andy Diggle. Art by Steven Segovia. Colors by Ulises Arreola. Hope I said that right. And then letters by Simon Boland.
That's quite the last name.
Shadow Man is, of course, the latest. It's not a part, I don't think, officially of its Icons line, which it ought to be because Shadow Man's like one of the oldest Valiant characters there's ever been.
I didn't know they had an Icons line.
Yeah, that's when they launched Ninjak and Bloodshot Salvation.
You'd think this would be part of that. Weird.
You would think, because it was a part of its initial rollout.
Mm-hmm.
However, it has an absolutely gorgeous cover.
Is that a Renato Guedes cover?
It is not.
No?
It is Tansy Zonjic.
Oh, okay.
Which we'll be discussing more via RPAD thanks to our undercover feature later today on Doom Rocket. I don't know anything about this book. I know it's a little weird to have a lead black character who dabbles in voodoo written by a British guy.
Yeah.
But that's fine. Shadow Man number 1 looks absolutely gorgeous. The art is of the top-tier Valiant quality that we've come to expect.
Yeah, Valiant puts a lot of work into these books, and they really, from a retailer perspective, they really try to be friendly to us. The first arc is going to only be 3 issues, and then they're going to rush out the trade.
That's great.
I think the first 3 arcs are going to be 3 issues each, so it's easy to jump on, but that's really great to do.
And so you should jump on this. Check it out if you're curious at all. Shadow Man number 1. I'm going to read it. So should you. MJ, what's next for you?
My next one is going to be a boom book, Abbott number 3.
I really love this book.
I love the shit out of this book.
Holy crap. Saladin Ahmed could write a Constantine book for the rest of my life.
And but I don't want him to. I want him to write this.
Exactly. I was going to say that right after that statement. Well done.
It's so great. Its era setting is great. Its location setting is great.
I'm a Michigan boy, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's in Detroit. Its main character is so wonderfully charismatic and, oh, I love her so much.
And nuanced.
Yes.
And nuanced. She's got...
And just smart and savvy and, like, sympathetic without...
Elevator pitch habit.
Comparing it to Constantine is very apt, but it's Constantine if... Constantine combined with Lois Lane, combined with, like, Shaft, but a lady.
Mm-hmm.
It's lovely.
It is.
Yeah.
And the art is done by Sammy Cavella, who did beautiful canvas for Black Mask.
The art is beautiful.
Yeah, no, it's very lurid, and it, oh man, that should have been in my picks.
It's just beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love that book.
Yeah, so the 3rd issue is out this week. Look it up if you can. Boom did a 2nd printing of the 1st issue, so.
Sold well enough,
yeah,
at least.
Yeah, good comic shops should be able to get you that 1st issue, as well as the 2nd and 3rd.
Yeah, you heard it here on Casual Wednesdays. Go to your LCS and say, give me Abbott.
Yeah, I've got it stocked at mine because I really, really wanted it on the shelves. It's great. It's
very
great.
Cool.
What's your next one, Jared?
My next one. Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man number 302, second part of the Amazing Fantasy arc by Mr. Chip Zdarsky, pencils Joe Quinones, inks Joe Rivera, and color artist Jordan Gibson. This issue scared the shit out of me.
Yeah?
Yeah, I got to read it last night. It's got that typical Zdarsky ebullience, however, it has a twist at the end, which I will not spoil here, that actually gave me pause for a minute. I was like, what the... fuck am I reading here? This entire arc is insane because it takes place in an alternate timeline and Peter Parker from our timeline seems pretty okay changing the future. Maybe to see how it washes out, like stop the Green Goblin before he begins, but it kind of backfires. I think there's only one issue left to this
Yeah, they're all short arcs.
Yeah, so I don't know how the hell is this going to end. We got one issue left, and I'm scared shitless right now by Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, number 302. Yeah. Weird. So that's my next pick. MJ, what's next for you?
All right. Is this my last one? I think it's my last one.
I think so.
Aforementioned, another Marvel book, Jessica Jones, number 18. This is the final Jessica Jones book by her original creators, which is Mr. Brian Michael Bendis, Mr. Michael Gatiss, Mr. Matt Hollingsworth, and Mr. Corey Pettit of VC.
I always thought it was Petit.
I don't know. It might be. Yeah, I don't know. The issue is great. They tied up like the last story arc in the last issue. So this one doesn't really have a lot of like loose ends hanging off there. It's a really great little done in one, and it feels so much more like the original series than the last, you know, the last few arcs of the series has. It's just like Jessica working on a case and just cool shit happening, her going around to different characters in the Marvel U. It's very heartwarming without being overly sentimental.
It doesn't know how to schmaltz.
No. It's still Jessica Jones. Yeah. She's still
heart. Me but a woman.
Kind of.
I'm kidding.
No, kind of, yeah. It's great. There's a really nice heartfelt letter at the end by Bendis kind of saying farewell.
Oh, jeez. It's really happening, isn't it?
Yeah. But it's really funny. In his letter, he puts in little smiley faces, like little like colon parentheses smiley faces.
He does that in his tweets all the time.
But this is in a letter, like a comic book, like an official thing printed in a book. 5 smiley faces throughout this letter.
The internet affects us all.
It gives me hope for as far as me ever being a writer. It's like, oh, you can do that, huh?
Yeah, you can do that.
Just put these fucking little emojis in there.
He's the highest paid writer that exists in comics.
It's just super funny.
You'll be fine.
It was, and it read well also. Mm. But you can tell he loves this character.
Yeah.
And he should, you know, he co-created it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to where they're going to go with it. They have a little... the final page in the back, Jessica Jones will return fall 2018, which is very Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
It's funny. I'm going to miss this series, but I'm glad it's going out sort of on its own terms.
Yeah.
I'm glad that it is also continuing with new creators. But yeah, go check out Jessica Jones 18. You don't have to read the shit that goes before it if you haven't been reading the new series. It's, you know, done in one.
Check it out.
It's great.
Yeah, end of an era right there.
Seriously. What's your last for the week, Jonesy?
My last for the week is The Terrifics, number 2 from DC Comics.
I was going to have that on mine, but I took it off because you grabbed it first.
Well, I'm absolutely in love with this book. As we mentioned earlier, we're not huge on metal, but this came out of it, so I'm not too mad about it.
If I can forgive metal for existing, just because this resulted from it.
Harsh.
Yeah.
So this is a part of the New Age of Heroes DC line. I don't know if it's officially a line, but they put the artist before the writer. So storytelling by Ivan Reyes and Jeff Lemire, which is fine. Pencils by Ivan Reyes and Jose Luis, and I literally could not tell the difference in this issue.
It's really weird that he's not being inked by Joe Prado.
Yeah.
I noticed it a couple times that it was a little mushier than normal.
I think it
might be the lack of Joe Prado. But
it was kind of Quietly-esque, actually, in a couple panels.
I love Joe Prado's work.
Mm-hmm.
I love his work with Reyes. Yeah. So I hope he's back soon. Might have just been like a rush issue.
Could be. We had 2 inkers. And then, of course, there was Jose Luis doing pickups. So Vicente Cifuentes and Jordi Tarragona did the inks this time around. So yeah, they were probably rushing to get this out.
Yeah, they might have Joe Prado working on like a later issue or something.
Marcelo Maiolo does the colors. I'm trying to decide whether or not I like the hues that he's been employing in this book. I mean, it's very Cosmic DC. And Cosmic DC, in my mind, has like a very clean look to it. This one's very soupy and green. When I think about Cosmic DC, I think of, like, of course, Kirby's Fourth World and, you know, Crisis and stuff like that. So a lot of Kirby crackle. This has, like, fourth dimensional Kirby crackle. There's a depth to it that I like, but I'm not sure about the hue. So I'm making up my mind about that. But in the meantime, the book itself is a hoot.
Oh, I love the shit out of this. I read it last night and I just, like, got done with it and I was just giggling and just like, oh my god, I love this comic.
Yeah, who said it on Twitter? Like, Lemire's writing Fantastic Four for DC and Superman for Marvel.
Because
that is spot on.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll be reading Century when it comes out, but for now, The Terrifics number 2 will do. And that closes out our top 5 most anticipated issues of the week. Every week, we ask you a question on social media. And this week's question, what kind of comic stuff would you like to hear us cover in future episodes of Casual Wednesdays? MJ, what's doing over on Twitter?
At JLudwig86 and said, whatever happened to no events for 18 months?
Over on Facebook, Clyde Hall, hey Clyde. He said, new comics-related TV show reviews, insights, impressions, like you do with movies, could be fun. Thanks, Clyde. We'll probably end up getting around to doing stuff like that. I mean, we do stuff like that every once in a while.
We used to do more TV. We definitely pulled that back just because TV recaps are so time-consuming.
Oh, my God.
And over on Facebook, Taylor Esposito, letterer extraordinaire, said, process with creators if possible. I love hearing how others work.
And finally, over on Twitter, Jeremy Hashat, at Jeremy Hashat, said, maybe some 2000 AD talk or talk about non-current books that you'd like to go back and read when you have the time. We have done time capsule books on episodes, and we'll probably end up doing those again. But yeah, I think more 2000 AD stuff's in our future.
That'd be great.
They got the Halo Jones thing coming out soon.
Yes.
So when we get a chance to read that, we will definitely be talking about that and more future stuff, more future shocks from 2000 AD. So we actually try to make people call us up, leave voicemails to wish us well.
Well, Clyde did that thing with that band, had them give us a little shout out.
We got one shout out congratulating us, and it was from a group of strangers who clearly don't listen to the podcast.
But it was still super cool.
Wishing us well, yes, during their open mic night at King City Books, which I figure is in South Illinois somewhere. So thanks, Clyde. Thanks for doing that.
We really appreciated it. It was super great.
That made our day. Speaking of, that's it. That's all the time we have for this installment of Casual Wednesdays. Need more of this dweeby little podcast in your life? Check out our 50-episode archive over on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, we made it, baby.
Yay!
Rate and subscribe. Tell us how we're doing. Or search Casual Wednesdays over at DoomRocket.com. And while you're on the internet, look us up on Twitter. I'm at @JaredJones_MJ. Where can they find you?
At @MollyJane_K.
And that's it. So until we finally get that long gestating Mother Panic Spider-Ham crossover, I remain Jared, that's MJ, and from all of us here at DoomRocket.com, have a great new comic book day.
Spider-Ham.